Hi, everyone. Trish Alcoholic.
Hi, Trish.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Tracy, for asking. Thank you, Darlene, for coming. You know, I asked Darlene to come with me whenever I speak, and I know she wants to say no, but she tries, you know, she says yes. She's thinking no the whole way out here. Anyway, thank you. I know it was a long drive. So I'll just get into it, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. Did I do something? No, okay. Let's see what happened. So I'll just start at the beginning. My parents were born in Ireland, and they did not know how to have kids in America. That was my first problem. That's what I thought anyway. They moved out here when they were, you know, really young, like 18, and my dad was in his 20s. They met in the Bronx, New York. That's where I was born. That's where my four siblings were born. And it was just a crazy Irish alcoholic house. My dad drank a lot, and my mom was a rageaholic, a crazy lunatic, yeller, screamer. You know, she was in charge of all five kids plus my dad, and she didn't drive or work or do anything like that, but she ran the house, and we were all afraid of her. And my dad just used to be like, he was like a nice guy. He still is a nice guy. He's 90. He's still around. And he was, you know, hid a daily drinker, hid his alcohol. Sometimes he didn't hide it. Sometimes he didn't come home. Sometimes he never yelled back at my mother, though. He just, like, took it, and that was how we lived our life. And I was a extremely shy, as I used to call it, kid. Now they call it self-obsessed, but I was very shy from the very beginning. When I was in second grade, if I had to throw up, I did it on the desk. I was afraid to get up and go to the bathroom. I wet my pants. They called me, you know, trash and just weird instead of Trish, trash. And I was afraid of my own shadow. I was afraid. I was constantly thinking of what you thought of me. From the moment I could think, it was just like, what do you think of me? And the fear that surrounded that just like took over my body. So I couldn't speak. I couldn't raise my hand. I couldn't get up to go to the bathroom if I was in the movies because you would all be looking at me. I just hated to be any kind of center of attention, anybody looking at me. I needed to pick up a drink from kindergarten. Like I just needed to relax. I needed something to calm my head, my thoughts, what you thought of me. So that's how I was as a child. And then, you know, we moved to New Jersey, which is where I grew up the rest of my, when I was 8 years old, we moved to New Jersey. And there were some girls that lived on my street that were the same age as me. And I'm a people pleaser. I'm a people pleaser to the nth degree. I don't even know. Pleasing you actually makes me happy. So like if you like blue, I like blue. If you like pizza, I actually like pizza then because I want to, your happiness is more important than mine. And I also have all this fear. So I don't, you know, the first time we pick up a drink, I don't know how old we are, 11, 12 years old. We take our parents' alcohol and drink it. I don't even drink it because I'm afraid. I don't know what it's going to do to me. I'm afraid of my mother. My mother is a rageaholic, but she also drinks like five times a year and takes to the bed, like vomiting, and she has like an allergy to alcohol, but she still does it, like St. Patrick's Day, New Year's Eve, the Irish dances, you know, the graduation, and then she's in bed throwing up for 3 days and like can't take care of us, can't do anything. So she could be an alcoholic too. She passed away like 14 years ago, but it's just in my family. I have uncles and aunts and my brother who's 11 months older than me. He was, you know, I feel like he got in was in juvenile detention from, I don't even know how young, super young, like all through, he never even went to high school. He just was always in trouble, drugs and alcohol. So the focus was a lot on him, not on me. And so I got to just like, once I did pick up that drink, which was shortly after, you know, the first few times I tried it, I loved it. I loved the feeling of alcohol. I loved how I felt when I had alcohol in me. I loved how I could actually go bowling, how I could actually talk to you, how I could actually dance at a party. All these things I couldn't do because I was just like awkward and uptight and incomprehensible. unbelievable demoralization before I even knew what it meant. It was how I lived my life. And so I went, after that point, let's say I'm 12 years old, I know I can drink. So now any opportunity I can, I go. On the weekends, I don't even care what my parents think anymore, because my brother's so bad that my mother's not going to actually call the cops on me too, because that would really look bad for the neighbors. So I just kind of do what I want to do. I show up when I want to show up. And my mother's just raging and beating and yelling and hitting and the wooden spoon and the belt and all of that stuff, which I don't even know. Like, we didn't, back then it wasn't child abuse. That was like, that was how everyone grew up. We were all beaten. Who cares? Like, I say this thing, like, if you haven't been raped and you're an alcoholic, are you even an alcoholic? And I know that's not cool to say, but it's like, we all lived like that. You just woke up and you were like, oh, I don't, how did I get here? I have no idea, you know? And that's just how I lived my life. And I also was, because of the Irish Catholic, you know, I don't know if you know this, but Irish people don't have feelings at all. Like, we do not address feelings. We don't say, I love you. We don't even pat you on the back, because that's way too touchy-feely. So there's no hugging in my house. We don't say, God bless you. It's like, ooh, get a room. Like, no, there are no, we have your back, and we will, you know, fight. Like, I beat up some kid for my, like, we will just take, we have each other's back, but there is no speaking of emotions. There is no touching. Okay, so I don't even know feelings. I don't know emotions. I honestly don't know them. I know, you know, hate, anger, funny, you know, I don't know, like, sad. I honestly don't. I don't know how to feel it. Because at the point when I could start feeling sad, all of a sudden I'm drinking and using, and I'm like, also, like, have these constant suicidal thoughts. Like, I wish I was dead. I hope God takes me. Like, please, God, I take, like, whatever, I'm just stupid shit to try and kill myself, but not really, like Sudafed and aspirin. That's all I could get my hands on, you know? But I'm constantly thinking, I actually hate myself to the core of my being. Like, it's not low self-esteem. It is so much less than zero self-esteem. Like, everything about myself I hate. I hate my face, my body, the words that come out of my mouth, how I talk to you. Why did I say that? You're so stupid. You're such a loser. You're ugly. You're dumb. You're an idiot. Like, constant tapes like that through my head. And the anxiety to keep up with what you think I should be and how awkward I am and how much you like me, the only time I had relief and freedom was drinking. So by the time I got to high school, I'm now drinking every weekend. I go from being like the loser in school to being by the time I graduate high school, I'm now the class clown, because I'm now making everybody laugh. I'm now more comfortable. I'm now drinking like almost every night. And I'm also blacking out every time I drank. I didn't even know you could drink and not black out. I thought the purpose of drinking was to black out. Like, you drink till you black out. You get carried home, you walk home, you make a fool of yourself. Like, who cares? The demoralization is there in the morning. Maybe if you, like, kiss somebody's boyfriend, or if you, you know, wore something weird or whatever. But it goes away the next night when you start drinking. You know, I have friends that are like, let's go to the movies tonight. I'm like, okay, let's just bring a bottle of rum in so we can have it with our Diet Coke. Because I don't know how to do it sober anymore. Like, I have to have that relief. I have to have it in me. So I go to college because I'm actually smart in school. My brother, you know, he fails out, so I have to actually get the grades. So I get grades. I get into a local, a state school in New Jersey, Trenton State, which is now New Jersey State College or something. And I'm going to live there because it's like 2 or 3 hours away from where we live in North Jersey. And so I go to college. My parents drop me off, and I immediately just get in with the drinking people. I have like 3 new girls in my suite. They're going to class. They're showing up. I'm drinking. I'm every single night I'm drinking. Like, they're drinking. Some of them are drinking on Monday and Tuesday nights because they don't have class on Monday and Tuesday. And then the other two are drinking on Thursday. So I'm just doing it with all of them. I'm showing up to class with my head sleeping on the desk, or I'm not showing up at all. So needless to say, I failed out of school after 1 year. So now I don't even go home. I don't even tell my mother I failed out. And like, again, my father's like, he's just like a kid, so he doesn't even care. But my mother is like in charge of the money and everything. And she's, somehow I'm home for the summer when the letter comes that says, you're dumb, you can't come back to college. So I hide the letter. I pretend I'm going to school the next year. I go back to the college. I don't need a ride. I got a ride, and I get a job at 7-Eleven, and I just party with all my friends that are actually in college, and I'm not. And my mother eventually found out, because I think they were like, she was calling them up about like, hey, don't you want the money for the sophomore year? And they're like, yeah, no, your daughter doesn't go to school here. So she found out, and I just stayed there. I hung out with derelicts. I stole money from the foreign exchange students. I quit my job at 7-Eleven. I actually didn't quit. I just didn't show up for a shift at 7 in the morning and went to Florida with no money and woke up with people next to me. I don't know who they are. I don't know where I am. I'm doing things like hitchhiking in the middle of the night. I knock on somebody's door in the middle of the night because I need a ride home. I don't know who it is. I just random house. Hey, can you give me a ride home? Some guy actually gave me a ride home. It's so weird. I'm so afraid of what you think of me, but I'm not afraid of getting mauled or killed or, you know, I'm going to New York City. I don't even care. Everybody's like, oh my God, it's so scary to buy drugs whenever. Like, I don't care. I'm like, let's go, let's go. I'm not afraid. Because I have this weird thing where I'm not afraid to die, or almost like I want to be a victim. Like, please kill me, hit me, somebody make me feel something. And so I do all this crazy physical stuff that is, I should be afraid of, but, you know, I act like I am so tough. Like, I don't have any fears. I don't care about anybody. I act like nothing bothers me. Like, you can't make me cry. You can't hurt me. You know, you can cheat on me. You can do this. I don't care. I never liked you anyway. That's my attitude. Like, I can't even say I like you, because then when you say you don't, I have to be embarrassed. So I just say I don't like you to begin with. And that's how my boyfriends were. That's how my friends were. I just have this wall or this space between you and me that's like nobody's touching it. And I don't even know what a wall is, because I don't know. When I came to AA and I saw the steps, I was like, it looked like a foreign language. I was like, what language is that? Because I've never heard half of those words. What is humility? And what is... I just didn't know them at all. Like, common welfare? What does that even mean? That's so above my thing. I know, like, I actually did better in math and science than reading. And so I don't know these words. And I was never taught feelings or emotions at home. So I didn't know these words. Anyway, so I'm in this college thing. I get kicked out. I come back to the town I live in. I can't go home because I hate my parents. So I bounce around a little bit, and I actually went home for a few minutes, for like a few months, and my mother started telling me I had to pay rent, and I was like, I hate you, I'm not paying to live here. And I got a job at my friend's, my friend worked as a secretary at a roofing company, and I got a job working in this sheet metal paint room upstairs, and in like this little dungeony area, and they made stuff out of sheet metal, and they painted shutters. And I painted shutters all day long, and I painted shutters, and then I went out every night and got drunk. And my paycheck was spent on alcohol and drugs, and by Friday I had no money. I was borrowing. So I just did that for the next few years of like living this life. And I started dating this guy that was crazy. I also like psychopaths. Like, the more of a psychopath you are, I just love you. Like, oh, you killed your mother. Yay. Like, I just want, you're the guy for me. Oh, you have guns. You have this. You have that. Let's go. Let's go. And I just love you. Like, even in sobriety, I'm just like, oh my God, look at him. He's in jail. Isn't he cute? I don't know what that is. I don't like healthy, happy, sane people. That's why even people in my life today, either you drink too much or you used to drink too much. There's no, like, even my kids, I'm like, God, drink something, you know? But anyway, not really. But anyway, I'm dating this guy who's a psycho. And the truth is, I don't really like him. But I don't know that that's an option for dating. I didn't know that I could like the guy. I just thought, if he likes me and he asks me out, that's who I'm supposed to be with, right? I don't even know. Like, even in a moment of sobriety once, he's like, do you want to come into the store with me? And I'm like, do you want me to come into the store with you? And he wouldn't make the decision. I had to make it, and I couldn't. I couldn't. I was like, no, you have to tell me. And I sound so pathetic. You would think I'm, my husband's like, where's that girl now? You tell me what to do constantly. But anyway, I just was really sick, and I didn't like this guy, and I'm working at the roofing company, and there's a guy that's my age, and I'm 20 years old. There's a guy that's my age, and I went to high school with him, and he's sober a year in AA. And there's another guy that's 35, and he's sober a few years in AA. And the both of them are like in cahoots, like they're leaving like women in AA pamphlets on the bench, you know, like, and I'm thinking, like, did they see my mother on St. Patrick's Day? Like, I think I'm 20 years old. Like, that's what we do. 20-year-olds drink. Like, that's my parents are the problem. My drinking is the only thing I have that is sanity for me. Even though I'm starting to get into trouble, even though, you know, I'm starting to get the incomprehensible demoralization, the couple of times that I've, you know, like you wake up and you're like, what happened last night? And you know it wasn't good, and you don't know where you are, and there's like a sumo wrestler next to you in bikini underwear, and you don't know his name, and you don't know how you got there. And you're just like, oh my God. And he says nothing happened, so you're like, I'm just gonna go with that. And stuff like that is happening, and I'm just like, my life is dangerous the way I live. But I also think I don't want to live, so who cares if it's dangerous? The sooner, my whole philosophy is you eat, you drink, you die. Life sucks. The sooner it's over, the better. And that was my thing. And I also had this thing like, I don't care. That was another thing I said all the time. There was a song, I think it was by Genesis, I don't care anymore. And I was like, that is my motto. I don't care. You could have told me my whole family died and I'd have been like, I don't care, I didn't like them. You could tell me I won the lottery and I'd be like, okay, cool, let's go drinking. Like, I didn't have I didn't have life left in me. Like, I was dead. The guys I worked with, the sober guy and this other guy in the sheet metal shop, used to do practical jokes, like, every day. They put, like, a cupcake or water, and they do all these trick things. And I remember pretending to laugh. And they were funny guys. And I remember just, like, I wanted to be able to have fun with those guys, but I was incapable. I was incapable of that, of just relaxing and having fun. I didn't know how to do it. Nothing was funny. Nothing was cool. Unless I was drinking. That was the next thing. Like, as soon as I get out of work, we can go out, we can start drinking, we can have a good time, and then I can relax, and then I can laugh, and then I can dance, and then I can do whatever. I was also a crazy bedwetter when I was drinking. Like, I can't even tell you how many times I peed in my pants in the middle of the day, in the middle of the party, wherever I was. And I had so many solutions to that if you guys need them. Like, you could just take your beer and pour it on yourself. And then you pretend you just spilled your beer. Like, I could tell a whole story, and I was convinced, absolutely convinced, that I had a bladder problem. We also don't go to the doctor if we're Irish either. You just put duct tape on it and call it a day. We just don't do that. So we either go to the dentist or the doctor. They just didn't have them on the farm, so we're not doing it here. So I have a bladder problem. That's the way it goes. I'm just gonna have this problem my whole life. Turns out I get sober. And I had never peed in my pants since I got sober. So that's like a miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous right there. So anyway, so then I, the guy Joe, who's sober a couple of years, he's 35 years old, him and I had been suspended for whatever reason, not showing up, drinking, smelling, all of it, doing lines on the paint cans upstairs, all of it. So I had been suspended for 3 days with pay, so of course I have no consequence, I'm not changing a thing. So then they do a little, my supervisor, the two guys that are sober, they call me and they do a little mini, like, sit down, like, you know, we have a bed for you. There's a 28-day program, we have a bed for you. We think you're an alcoholic. And so I'm like, oh my God, I don't even remember that meeting anymore, but I'm like thinking, like, I don't really like my boyfriend. I'm not allowed to live in his house, so I'm sneaking in and out. It's his aunt's house. I kind of don't like him at all, and I'm just thinking, like, maybe 28 days away would be a relief. Not that I want to get sober, because I have no interest in living, so why would I want to get sober? So I decide to take them up on this vacation, right? And it's like in bum whatever, New Jersey, so it's not really a vacation. It's also February, January, February, and it's like snowing and freezing. And I did like that I was indoors through a whole month of winter that year. But anyway, so I drive with Joe, the sober guy, and my crazy ass boyfriend who has set his mother's car on fire and has cut my curling iron cord and has hit me and has, the night before, as a matter of fact, they gave me this little intervention thing on a Friday and I was being picked up on Sunday. And so we went out. We went out to a bar the night before or during that weekend and I didn't want to go home. That's my last night of drinking for 28 days. I'm not going home. And he's like, we're going home. And it's a gray out, blackout. I barely remember it. I know that I told two guys at the bar that he was harassing me. This is the boyfriend I'm staying in this house. So they had a fight. They bring me back. He brings me back home. My luggage, which was a brown paper bag, was spilled all over the place with cotton balls, and I had to repack it for my rehab. Everything I own is in this brown paper bag. And Joe, the sober guy, and Bob, the alcoholic boyfriend, drive me to the rehab, which is like an hour away. I would love to be a fly on the car on the ride back for that one. Because my boyfriend wanted to sue my company for defamation of character for calling me an alcoholic. And so then these two guys had to drive back together. God only knows what happened. But anyway, so I go to this 28-day program, and now I can't talk again because I don't have alcohol in me. I'm super shy, self-obsessed. I don't know what you think of me. I hate myself. I hate you. I'm writing every day. Hate, hate, hate. Please, God, get me out of this. I'm crawling out of my skin. I hate it so much. 28 days is up. Where do you want to go? I have nowhere to go. I can't take care of myself. I honestly can't order pizza because I need to be drunk to order pizza or drinking. If I order pizza, I'd rather just not have it because what is the pizza guy going to think of me and how am I going to say it right? I can't do it. I'd rather not have it. And you want me to live on my own? I can't do it. I'm incapable. Meanwhile, I'm so tough. I don't need my parents. I don't need anybody. I can do anything I want, right? But I can't order pizza. So they give me these choices. Like I could go back with my boyfriend because he wants me to come. I could call my parents. I don't want to call them because I don't like them. Or I could go to this halfway house for women, alcoholics. And I don't really have a choice. I have no choice. So I go to the halfway house. And the halfway house is 17 women that have been there longer than me. So now I'm a people pleaser again. 17 women. I don't want to be sober. I don't want to be here. I just want to die, and I want my life to go really fast. I want it to go fast and be over. And now I'm in this halfway house, and there's all these women that I don't like and I'm afraid of. And I'm writing in a journal every day how much I hate them, how much I hate people. And I don't know how long I was in there. I think I moved into my first apartment in August and I got sober on February 8th, 1987. And I'm in this halfway house and this one girl says, let's go get some wine coolers and smoke some pot. And I'm like, I never had a wine cooler. Let's go try it. Who drinks wine coolers? I never drank wine. I drank tequila and rum and beer. That's it. Like, that's it. And I drank for effect, not to like sip wine. So we go buy wine coolers, we get, she rolls a joint, and we pull over. We're supposed to be going to a meeting, we're signed out, and right before she smoked pot and drank, I said no. And it was the first time in my life, I made this decision that my life would be a little easier if I cut out the drugs and alcohol. I didn't want to be sober. I didn't think there was anything good coming. I didn't want to be sober, but I did want it to be a little easier. I was so freaking tired, and I just was like, you know what? I'm not going to do it. And I felt like for the first time in my life, it was like God helped me make that decision. And I got home, back to the halfway house, and they were drug testing us the next day, and she drank like a whole bottle of vinegar so that the test would be screwed up. I don't know if that works, but she drank a bottle of vinegar. And she was vomiting and sick to her stomach. And I was like, wow. I looked at her and I was like, I made the right decision. Good job. And I had this moment, like I was so happy that she was sick and I wasn't, and I made this right decision. And then the next day, because I had to keep a journal, and I'm not a writer, I hate writing. The next day I wrote that I felt good because the day before I felt good. And it was the first time I had moments of feeling good. And so I made the decision to do the AA thing. Life would never be good. You eat, you drink, you die. That's it. It's never going to be good. But I'm going to do it just to make it easier. So I'm not hitchhiking, knocking on doors, waking up, not knowing. I'll have a little less, you know, shoulders stress in my life. So I decide to do it. I get out. I get my job back at the roofing company. I get a job in the office as a secretary. And I start going to AA meetings. And one of the things I hear a lot in AA is that you have to want it. And I didn't want it. I didn't want it, and I was pushed into it. And it took me, like, I want to say 6 months to a year to want to be here. And even then, I was, like, not 100%. Like, I wasn't 100% sure I wanted sobriety, but I knew my life was better. I knew my life was not even better, like, easier. It was, my shoulders went down a little. I was relaxed. I made friends. I actually could bowl sober. We joined a bowling league. I jumped into AA, and I didn't do everything you were supposed to. And I still hated myself for a long time. That took a long time to go away, because it just doesn't happen overnight. Like, I had to take actions over and over again. Like, you know, you tell your kids, pick up your shoes, pick up your shoes, pick up your shoes, 1,000 times. It's like me, like, you know, take, you know, esteemable actions, or do good things, or do the steps, or help other people. You have to tell me 1,000 times. I can't speak. People are asking me in New Jersey, by the way, in New Jersey, you speak when you have 90 days, and they don't even care if you're good. They're just like, sign up to speak. So every you sign up, my sponsor would be like, take a speaking commitment. And I'm like, I'd rather die than speak in front of them. I'd rather drink. So I was like, there's no way. So I mean, I had to take a 90-day chip with my sponsor. They do this thing where they pin you, and she talks and then I talk. She pinned me and I ran out of the room. I don't even know when I came back, probably the next day. I was just afraid of the podium. I was afraid of everything. And so just, I was a slow person. And like Darlene said, like, I just kept showing up. Like, I wasn't doing it on the schedule of the regular AA people, where you like do the steps in your first year or whatever. I was on the slow. Like I said, the language was so above my head. I just didn't get it. I didn't understand. Like, I got that I was powerless over alcohol, but everything else, when they said turn your will and your life over to God, I was like, I don't have a will in my life. It's your will in your life, because I don't even care. And I had this thing, you know, when I finally took the third step, where it's like, you know, I finally said, like, I believed in God. I believed in God, and I believed he got me sober. But I also believed my brother got his fingers cut off, and he's a thief. I also believed in that Catholic punishing God. And so I used God for drinking. And the rest of it, I got this. I got this. I got this. I got this. And it took me years to turn the rest of my life over to God. Years. But I stayed, and I kept on doing what was asked of me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I got a huge, huge life here, like a huge life. I met a guy in New Jersey at a meeting. I thought he was a newcomer, and he was cute, and I said, hey, how's it going? Turns out he had 6 years, and he's from California. He's from New Jersey, but he was sober out here. And he decided he didn't like New Jersey AA, because New Jersey AA is a little more relaxed. Like, we get up, we talk during the meetings, we smoke, we do it all. At least it was back then. And so he's like, I can't stay sober here. You guys don't do it right. So he moved back to Pacific Group, and then I did the back and forth thing, and then I moved out here. And at first I hated you guys. I was like, you guys eat tofu, and I like double cheese on everything. And I was just like, I couldn't deal. And it took me years. Every time I got up to the podium, I was like, you people. In Jersey, we're way nicer. We don't judge. We don't have to wear skirts. We don't do this. We don't do that. And you know, now I go back to Jersey and I judge all them. But anyway, I am so grateful for my life. I married that guy, and I was also never going to have kids. Never going to have kids. How would you bring kids into this disgusting, crazy world? Like, no way, no way. Then I'm training for a marathon, and I got pregnant. I didn't even know I was pregnant. Turns out it was twins, and I was so freaked out about having kids, so freaked out. But I had these two kids, and then I had another one like 5 years later because I thought, let me see what one's like. Dumbass, you're not gonna have one kid, now you have three. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. But anyway, my meetings took a little bit of a back seat. I still went, I always went, but my kids' life got really big, and the moms at school that looked so good. Like, they know how to party. They are drinking and they're going to PTA and they're driving nice cars and they're like fun. And my AA friends are whining about their husbands and their depresses and their life is so hard. And I'm like, my school friends are so much more fun. And I'm doing this whole deal and I'm hanging out and I'm at an Oktoberfest kids' parents' party, and they're playing drinking games. And I'm holding a stein full of beer to see, because I'm strong. Who can hold it the longest? And I had like an awakening. Like, I am minutes away from drinking. Like, I felt it, and I thought at that point that it's so funny. I was 18 years sober, and that's how long the girl that Darlene was talking about, she's 18 years and I sponsor her. And she went out, she told me 2 weeks ago that she's been using for 6 months. And she's doing the thing with the moms at school, and that's how she went out. And I think that's the closest I ever came to, and I didn't make the decision to drink. I thought my life was good. I just was playing on the tracks. I was playing on the tracks because I got complacent here, and some of my friends, not Darlene, were a little like drama and suffering. And I came back and I recommitted to AA, and I started, I upped my program, and I did the deal. And, you know, I blamed my mother for all my problems my first 25 years of my life. And then my second 25, I just blamed my husband. So I don't actually ever have to look at my fault because there's always somebody to blame right there in front of me. So I do the deal with the kids, and we have this amazing, we host a ton of parties at my house, AA parties, holiday parties, like everybody comes to our house, and it's a big, huge, full life. And about 5.5 years ago, no, 6 years ago now, my sponsor, who love and adore, she's from the Bronx, Irish Catholic, just like me, and sober at the time. I can't remember how long she was sober, but a long time. And she sponsored me for 27 years. She was at my wedding when I was 27. And she sponsored me the whole time. And I'm the type of person, it takes me 10 years to tell you my middle name. So it took me a long time to get close to my sponsor. And when I was 33 years sober, she took a gun to her head and killed herself. And out of nowhere, like none of us saw it coming. She was in AA doing the deal. She had like a medical thing. I don't even like calling it a suicide because it was definitely a medical thing that happened to her. I don't know what it was, but I did that thing where I'm like, I'm fine, I'm good. You know what, I never liked her anyway. I didn't say that, but I tried to say that. I tried to do that. And then 6 months after that, I wanted to leave my husband. I was like, you know what? You're the reason for all the problems in my life. And I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have a sponsor for 4 months when my sponsor died. Because I was like, oh, if your husband dies, do you go get a new husband? I don't have to get a new sponsor. It's too hard. And I don't want to start all over. I don't want to go through that again, like the beginning. Like, I don't want to tell someone my deep, dark secrets. It's hard for me. I don't like to open up like that. So I got a sponsor. I called her. I told her what was happening, and I recommitted again. And that's the thing about AA, you can start all over. I can be a newcomer anytime. And it just so happened that when I did start all over, my youngest kid moved out. Like, my twins are 30 now, and my younger one is 24, and he left. And so the day that my life imploded was the day he left, and I got to start all over with no kids in the house. And I did the deal, and I started to be nice to my husband, and it turns out he's a lot nicer when I'm nice to him. Who would have believed that? Because I thought it was his fault the whole time. So, like, I just, Alcoholics Anonymous, Everything I get here, like everything is here. Like everybody, you have a miscarriage, you can talk to 20 people. You know, your people drink, you talk to people. Like anything that has happened to me, I want to leave my husband. There's 100 people you can talk to about that in every room. And it's like, God, we're so lucky. We just have free therapy, free answers, free tools, like everywhere you go. And it's like, most people don't have this. And I'm so blessed and I'm so lucky. And I also got a huge God in my life now. Somebody said, like, I used to think if I was good, like I'm going to do everything right. I'm going to go to meetings. I'm going to be a good wife, be a good mother, PTA, all the stuff, everything perfect. And then God will reward me. And what I didn't realize is that that's not how God works. He doesn't punish and reward us. All I have to do is look in the direction of God, and he's there. No matter how bad I am or how low I am or how good I am, if I look, if I open that door, God is there for me. And for that, I'm grateful. I'm grateful I got to see that kind of late in my sobriety, but I did see it. And I feel like 10 years from now, I could have another awakening, another start all over, another reteachable moment. And I get to do it with you. The joy's in the journey. Like, I'm never going to get there. Like, I'm never going to get well, like Darlene says. I'm never going to be there. But the journey is the fun part. Like, the bad and the good and the pain and the joy I get to do with you guys. And, you know, for that, I'm grateful. And thanks for my amazing life. Thank you, guys.